Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Product Coffee, a podcast where product management leaders share stories, advice, and thoughts on all things product over a cup of coffee. Grab a cup of Joe and join us to level up your product career 30 minutes at a time.
Welcome to the show. We have Peter Van Noordenen, I believe.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. There we go. Got it. On the show today, Peter, we got connected by a mutual friend and went into his background with product management and AI most recently, which very curious to get into. He's got a really interesting background and excited to talk about some of the components of what he's doing today for other companies. So Peter, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Kevin, great. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Been a fan since we got connected and yeah, excited to talk product and solopreneurship and AI and all those things. So
amazing. Let's go back into your background a bit. I always start off with a little bit of an elevator pitch, if you don't mind going through and giving folks the journey of getting into product and to where you are now.
Sure. Yeah. So Peter Van Noordenen, creative product and growth leader who I'm really passionate about advanced technology and the teams that build it. Recently for me, that's meant AI and machine learning and those types of things. I got my career started as a journalist, actually a writer for various kind of travel and business publications, and then got my first product job at Orbitz, actually. So in the travel space for a little small kind of teeny website of theirs called theway.com, and then worked in the digital publishing business for a little bit and got into TripAdvisor, where I was for about 5 years as a group product manager and across B2B and B2C, but with a big focus on how you use machine learning. We didn't really call it AI at the time, but AI type techniques to create really great content experiences for end users, whether those were travelers or business owners who we served on both sides of that platform. After 5 years there, I decided I really wanted to join a startup. And so I joined this cybersecurity startup called Slimdot, where I was the first growth hire. And so really set about building sort of the product-led growth motions for that company, real focus on cloud native security and how we could bring AI tools to bear on that. With the advent of generative AI, I just got really excited in that technology. And as of this month, have left Slim AI and I'm out there consulting on my own, doing sort of AI product and growth consulting for both Slim AI, who continues to be a client of mine, and now some other companies as they look to apply AI to their businesses, their product, their operations, et cetera. Yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Well, anything personal you'd like to share? What's home life look like?
Yeah. So I have a 2-year-old. So home life is pretty chaotic and certainly a big part of who I am and part of this kind of transition into needing a more flexible schedule and wanting to spend more time with my son has driven a lot of those decisions for my wife and I. I live in the Boston area. So I'm like an unabashed New Englander. I'm a huge fan of the Boston startup and technology scene. I know there are others out there and maybe we're not as big as our friends in New York and San Francisco, but I'm a really big fan of New England. I grew up here. I also lived out in Colorado for a long time. I'm an avid outdoorsman, big skier, big camper, hiker, all of that kind of stuff. I know the Denver scene as well and think that's got like a really great technology scene there as well.
Thanks for going into all that. That's great. I wrote down a whole bunch of other follow-ups to get into, but one in particular that stands out is the first principles of AI. Like you talked about machine learning. We've called it that back in the day. I think the new hype is generative, like what you mentioned. And so for our listeners that have no experience with AI outside of seeing OpenAI in the headlines or some of the things, can you break that down for our listeners to say, like, what is the distinction between these two at a very minimalist level that we can dive into from there?
Yeah, sure. From a product perspective, the thing that you're thinking about with generative AI is really something that can create on its own, whereas machine learning is more of a predictive technology where, yeah, you're using probabilities, but you have, you know, a bunch of different inputs that you're using, and then you're trying to predict a certain output. In generative AI, the sort of notion of hallucination and not necessarily knowing what you're going to get at the end is really a feature, not a bug. And I think that really changes the way you think about product in building with these tools and applying AI, whether you're applying it to your operations or whether you're applying it to your product, because we've all grown up in this world of like determinism. And when you work with an engineering team, you say, okay, I want this information coming from the database, going into the UI in this place. And when the user clicks this, I want it to do this. And that's all determinate. Well, as you start working with large language models, LLMs, or any kind of sort of text to speech or text to vision type of capability in these generative tools, well, you don't necessarily know what you're going to get at the end. So it's much more about setting guardrails in the product and kind of choosing a use case that works well in that context. And that can be really challenging as a product manager, as a product team. It puts your software engineers in a whole new realm of sort of comfort level with ambiguity. And I think that's been the biggest thing I've seen as I've started working here. It's okay, you're used to being on a machine learning team and okay, we're going to get our answer at the end. You start using LLMs and I'm going to hit refresh on this and it's actually going to look different. And you need to really think about what that experience is. But the power of it is that since it's predicting what the next word or the next answer is going to be, is you can pour a bunch of your own data into these LLMs and then get really great answers that you just wouldn't anticipate. And I'm just constantly impressed, thrilled, excited by the types of responses that you get. There's no way it can do this. Let me just try it. And then you do it and you get a response back that's not just what you thought it would be, but actually better than what you thought it would be. And I'm all in on this technology. And that was a big motivator for me in making this transition into consulting, because I just really wanted to be thinking about generative AI, working on generative AI all the time. I had some ability to do that at Slim AI, wanted to do more. And yeah, I think it's a really exciting time that we're in. I think it's going to really change, but I think it's going to make us think differently about product quite a bit.
Absolutely. I just, as you were talking about working with engineering teams that are working within machine learning versus the generative AI models and being a little uncomfortable, it's almost as if product managers are very positioned to be the forefront of this technology, this emergence of this new kind of technology trend, where you think of like product gen AI, right? Mm-hmm. What if down the road, engineering, product design, these functions aren't as crucial to them going to spin up a prototype. Hey, build me a prototype to go do this. I think some of these tools already exist out there today. So it's eerie for some folks, right? Is what does that future of work look like? What does that future of innovation look like? And it's also exciting, right? There's a lot more capabilities at our hands. There's a lot more, you would imagine there's a lot more competition for very similar use cases or very personalized products that you're building for yourself that you have control over, right? And so it's a really interesting new era that we're in terms of product management and software technology. But I tend to see, I have a hunch that you have the optimistic and exciting viewpoint over this next wave. And so what gets you excited about the future of this technology?
You hit on a lot of stuff that I think is very interesting. When I was at MIT Sloan, I had a professor, Simon Johnson, who was a chief economist of the World Bank. And we were talking about robotics at the time and kind of AI, it was early days. And he said, if you don't want your job displaced by robots, be the one who works on the robots. And that's always stuck with me, which is that I think there are people who are going to be in the future. It's not going to be like, oh, does AI do this or does it not do this? It's going to be there are humans who are good with AI and there are humans who are not good with AI. And the people who are good with AI are going to displace, outcompete, just do better, faster, easier, cheaper than the people who are not leveraging the tools. That's my mindset on it. And I think something that you hit on that I'm really excited about is I've always considered myself like a technology first product manager. I just really love technology. I taught myself to code, taught myself to do data science, all of these kinds of things. And if you go to my website is product.codes. If you go there, I write a lot about these kinds of things and have a Discord community that I'm trying to spin up with similar types of like-minded people. I think AI just really lowers the bar to that technology, right? You don't need to teach yourself Python per se anymore as a product manager. You don't necessarily need to teach yourself how to use SQL. You can write English and get SQL and get the data analysis back from the LLM. So in that way, it has freed us a little bit from the constraints of, okay, I need X number of engineers to go build my feature. I can prototype, I can do data analysis, I can do research myself using these tools. So it becomes much more about like the what and the why what you're trying to do versus the how many resources do I have? Who do I know who knows how to code and do this?
Forces you know, so you to be a bit more strategic, right? At the same time, it's a little overwhelming, right? There's so many possibilities. Then you have to really be selective. So I think there's an importance to have a very clear, conscious, focused decision and strategy of what you're going to do and why, like you mentioned, versus, oh, we can just do whatever. There's a lot of options.
I have a, we had an advisor at Slim who works at Intuit, and he made the observation to me that AI is going from the realm of data scientists to software engineers. It used to be that AI was all models and sort of data scientists and thinking about these predictive analytics and all of this. And now it's getting into sort of the applied side of software engineers are getting to it. It's like, how do I build products with this? I'm like, okay, the natural progression there is going to be, it's going to come to product managers. And I think a lot of product managers are thinking about use cases right now. What are these LLMs? What are the generative tools going to be good at? What are they not going to be good at? How do I put that into my product? How do I put it in a place where it's not going to go off the rails or can be abused or cost too much money, which is another interesting aspect of these things, that they are not zero costs like we're used to in development. But eventually, I think product managers are going to get to a place where they're using these tools to accelerate development, get to market faster, do better A/B testing, do better evaluation of their own products. And that's probably going to be the next sort of phase, the next couple of years of this. So,
yeah, I wonder if you would play that out with me for a second. Let's say 10 years down the line, some of these trends accelerate. 10 years is a long time, right? But yeah, thinking about these trends accelerating, every single product team has the capabilities to quickly vet ideas, validate and accelerate ideas. What kind of world does that look like?
It's kind of freaky. Ten years is even harder these days because I just feel like things are getting so fast. It's even like I used to think in 18 months. Now I'm like, oh, that's even way too slow. Who knows what's going to something's coming out while we're talking about this podcast that's going to change the game. But I think one is that things are going to get much more interactive, right? So if I just like try to put myself in that world, like I've been doing a lot of work with sort of text-to-speech recently, the 11 Labs kind of product suite. I just started implementing that for a client. And it was so easy. It was so fast. It was like just so, such a good kind of air quotes developer experience for me that when my little prototype that I was building for this client, I was able to just integrate, like, hey, explain this chart, click a button. I could get five different voices and three languages just like out of the box. And that was only scratching the surface of what that could do. So I think as we think about text to video with OpenAI putting out Sora, if we think about all the image generation, like we're just going to be in a much more interactive and it's going to like these worlds are going to blend together where it's going to be easier. There's going to be lower technology barriers to creating more immersive experiences. And so I think that's an area that's really interesting and exciting. Gaming is like taking a big lead on that. Yeah. I think the second thing is like personalization, right? Where the next most successful use case outside of sort of the media and gaming area is advertising. Advertising has been using AI ML for a long time, and they've been very early on generative type of experiences just because you can say, okay, here's like the user data, the user graph information that we have about a user, and we can create an experience that's really tailored to them. I think we'll see a lot of acceleration there, but this sort of combination of personalization and interactivity, it's just really going to change the way we think about sort of these interfaces. Right now, the interface is mainly chat experiences, right? And those chat experiences are getting better. But I think we're going to just go beyond the chat bot very quickly here. And that's going to drive a lot of product development over the next few years.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things that I've talked with other folks about, too, is the like the creative graphic designer, the creative agency. A lot of this AI is almost displacing a lot of that work, or some would say maybe not, right? It still takes the prompt engineers to develop these things. There's some creativity within that. Even the output is not finalized. But do you think that those folks need to kind of position shift a little bit? Hey, the things that I'm doing now are not long-term sustainable. Do something different.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm going to flip this question back on you. I'll give you my quick take, but you're the graphic designer among us. I've always said I'm like not a designer. I always need a good designer with me because I can conceptually understand I need to wear like a shirt and pants, but making them like look good together is not my thing. I'll say that I think my experience with tools like Figma's AI, and especially in FigJam, like I'm doing a lot of like diagramming and kind of user flow stuff, that's gotten very good and it's only going to get better. So I think it's the same thing as product managers, right? It's, can you use these tools so you're doing less of the kind of rote menial tasks of pixel pushing and doing these things? And can you use them to, so you're not starting with a blank screen, just get yourself to a place where it's, okay, I'm thinking critically about what's there faster rather than I'm doing all this scaffolding. And I think that's true of software engineering, right? Starting with just like an open code editor and you're like, import some library. That's like a very daunting place to be. But with Copilot, you're just like, comment, I want this to be an app that does this thing, and it starts filling in the code for you. Okay, maybe some of this stuff doesn't work. Maybe it's not what I want. Maybe it's making some leaps that aren't there. But now I'm reacting and improving rather than creating from scratch, you know, base templates and, you know, this base stuff. So hopefully that's the same stuff for product managers with spec development, with kind of concept development. Hopefully it's the same thing for designers, right, with creating UIs and experiences. But yeah, I don't know. What's been your experience with it so far?
I think a lot of that's right. And I love that quote you had, this getting to that idea faster without the scaffolding, right? Like having to build the scaffolding to then operationalize and execute. So I like that, the speediness, the readiness to go and be creative and no barriers, right? That's the ability that we have now. And I think as far as like designer folks that maybe lean a little bit more towards graphic designer, product managers that are coming from that space, I still think it's be curious about it, right? There is a first principles behind design that doesn't get lost. And I think some of the tools that you can jump into if you're not a designer are great, but you might miss those first principles that you've learned as a graphics or whatever designer that could generate more concrete ideas or getting to specifics faster, making that harmonious kind of experience that you're looking to create versus just the executional task getting done. And so I think there's a lot of kind of parallels and acceleration that you can have on that. But I do fear generationally gap, having a new generation not being trained on fundamentals and diving into the abilities of the technology that they have today. I don't know why I fear that necessarily, but I just think it's going to generate a whole bunch of new ways of looking at things. You always, that quote, stand on the shoulders of giants, right? It's, if you miss those first principles, maybe tech gets so good that you don't even need them anymore. And then they generate all new first principles based on, I don't know. It's fascinating to me. But so I get a little mix of emotions of, okay, that I could see some like things maybe getting lost, but also things getting better and go either way.
I think you triggered something in me, which is I feel like I missed sort of the creativity input as well. What are really great creatives, right? They're, if I think about the writing world and I think about some of the writers that I really love, Kurt Vonnegut and people like this, it's people who like broke the rules, right? But they can break the rules because they know the rules. And so that's your like first principles, right? So that's what really creative thought does. And I think if as a writer, I'm constantly having my clients and other people writing using ChatGPT, and I can spot it now.
Exactly. You can.
And right. And I'm not alone in this. Other readers can see it and there's ways of merging it and stuff like that. But you can get to something where you can edit that faster. And that's a good workflow. Okay, put it in ChatGPT with a bunch of garbled thoughts, have it write something concise for you, and then you go edit and make it your style. But I think what you lose there is then you're always starting from the same point and then moving forward. Whereas what you're probably going to miss out on is that truly like original sort of spark of thought that's, if I just threw away all the rules and did something different, I might come up with something great. The CEO of TripAdvisor, it reminds me of a story, Steve Coffer said to me, I was like 3 days in and I'm sitting outside the TripAdvisor offices here in Boston and Steve's walking by and I introduce myself. I'd never met him before. I'm just some junior product manager there. And he says, what do you think so far? And I was like, oh yeah, it's a great experience, et cetera, et cetera. He says, no, what do you think about the product? And I was like, I don't, what do you, like all of TripAdvisor you mean? He's yeah. What are your insights from the, for your first 3 days? And I was like, I was stammering and he came in and he was gracious. He saved me. He said, I like to ask that because we all sit here and work on this product all the time. We look at it every day. We know every single piece of it. You're coming in with fresh eyes. Your insights are going to be more interesting in certain degrees than myself looking at it, who is looking at it all the time, paraphrasing a little bit. But what he was looking for was that sort of like step change thought, that sort of, hey, this makes no sense as a user. Now, the PMs have probably all been talking about this ad nauseum for years, But as a user, this makes no sense. And those were the insights he was like trying to get to.
I
was
and like, it's so valuable. With me. I love that.
Yeah.
The step change in thought. I like that. That's a good analogy. I think what you said resonated with me early on with the creativity within the new capabilities, right? It's like creativity exists by rule breaking. And then that rule breaking sets a new normal, which then creates a new set of rules. And then you repeat, you rule break again. And then, so I love that ability with AI of generating that scaffolding fast, that setting those bounds of creative constraints fast. Then that allows you to break. Yeah.
I'll say one of the most impressive in all of this and all this, what's happened over the past year plus, the thing that still floors me every day is just dropping into the Midjourney Discord and just watching those people who are really great Midjourney prompt engineers. And I'm not one of them. I can do a little bit, but there's so much creativity and it's just constant. It's just a constant stream of new images, new takes. And like some people are doing really hyper realistic photo shoots where they say what camera and aperture rating it is. Other people are like generating these dragon, fire breathing dragons who are like all this stuff. And it's just so crazy to see. And so it's awesome to look at that and say, okay, here are these new capabilities. We can't ignore this new capability because there's so much creativity coming out of that. But at the same time, these are people who know, like they know what they want to see at the end of this. They know how to get there. They have the sort of first principles, as you mentioned, vision of what that's going to be. And then they're learning the tools and how to tune the tools to what they're trying to do.
There was one interesting account there that I remember, I think my wife sent over to me because I really liked it's like retrofuturism kind of art. And it was called like Neptune Glitterball, I think, is if you guys have, if you've heard of this.
But I don't know if it...
this art is doing amazing things. So the way that, I don't know who this is, and I just, you know, follow the account. It's amazing. But they take... they use some generative AI and then they incorporate it into their photo shoots. And it's very, they have really cool ideas there. And yeah, it's really fun to see. So I'd encourage you all to check that out. I don't know, but
that's cool. Yep. I think one thing, so since I have writing background and flipping it on that, one big open question that I have is just what happens to the world of online content and SEO? And I'm not going to moan the, I don't know. I have some thoughts. If you
rules are being broken
LinkedIn,
right now, Peter.
Yeah. I have some thoughts about the SEO industry in general and all of that. Connect with me on LinkedIn and you'll get to see some of those. But so I'm not going to bemoan the idea of this sort of content marketing industry and all that kind of stuff, because I think it's just going to get so cheap and easy to create content. I just really wonder what that world is going to look like. Obviously, Google's going to respond and they already are. There's things like Perplexity AI that are coming up that are really awesome LLM-backed experiences that are a proxy for search. But I do wonder a bit what it's going to do for, you're wondering about graphic design. I wonder what it means for content writing at the end of the day. It's easier to write, but it's also, we're going to see a lot more kind of content farming and et cetera. And I don't think the answer is to just say, oh, this was AI generated, get rid of it, to this whole point of creativity. You're going to need to use these tools to generate content. But how do we ascertain good content from bad content? Good AI content from bad AI content, that is unsolved for me.
I think history repeats itself, right? If you look at short form content, TikTok, right? Everyone has a camera, they can create content. Now you have this flurry of content that is, some is good, some is crap, right? So this mid to long tail is extended, right? And I can see that same thing happening with Gen AI, but even at an accelerated pace, right? It's like even more now, more people have access to these things and they can have bots do it for them automatically whenever, right? And so it's, there's this long tail. It's like you can never be bored in this day and age. My goodness. Like it is always something that you can get involved in and read or whatever, right? So then that high tail, there's a bigger gap now. And I think that's going to be interesting, right? There's a bigger gap between the quality content creators, the people that are sitting out there and like doing the hard work, doing the good journalistic practices. I look at like The Economist and, you know, their model almost got assumed by going from print to digital. Now it's going to turn on its head. I think those quality publishers that have the quality journalists that put out the quality content, it's going to be a step and above what people can get today. And people will want that because of the noise in the ecosystem of the crap. And I think there's going to be a mix. I'm sure folks love fast food, right? And then they love the gourmet meals. So I think it's, I think that chasm's going to exist, but it's going to be greater. And there's going to be a lot more of that small to medium too. And then what does that mean for consumption? What does that mean for monetization? I still think the people that put in the hard work and can captivate an audience still capture a lot of the market share in terms of ad dollars, right? But I still, and then there's probably some pennies here and there that the people that are the small to medium that are just trying to put out crap. But yeah, I don't know. The rules are being broken again. We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I do. Yeah, I think it is good that we've gotten more subscription-based direct to thought leaders and influencer economy. Like, I think all that stuff is relatively good for, because I just don't think the advertising models were like working that well, the sort of search to eyeballs to dollars, at least for publishers and certainly for content creators and journalists and those types of people. I don't think that stuff is working super well.
The economy is fascinating. I think there's going to be such a huge, there's already a boost and a revelation happening there with the folks that are, more tools are becoming available to them, more ways to moderate content, more ways to go it on your own and be a solopreneur and do all this. So I think the folks that are more of the makers, the content creators, the people that are doing things and love to make and share, those are the people that are going to thrive in this next wave of the economy. But they could be overwhelmed with these solutions too. So I think it's going to be a very interesting era. And I also see this in relation to the economy with jobs and how tech is the chasm right now. All the layoffs that are happening, right? All these people being asked, that are staying on, that are being asked to do way more because they want you to, right? And the benefits are becoming, it's not as stable. It's more healthcare is more accessible. So why do I want to go work for a company when I can just go and do this on my own? And so you start to see that shift of employment. I would imagine over the next few years, it's already happening. The birth of contractors, that kind of this growth of solopreneurship and how that incorporates into the modern enterprise business is going to be really interesting and exciting for a lot of people. I think they'll be able to control their own destiny, all these things. So that's actually what I wanted to talk to you about next, right? Like, you are taking that leap. And what were some of the driving factors for you to decide to do this?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's an interesting time. And I agree. I think this was happening before COVID, and then COVID reset us a little bit. Companies hired up with things like the Jobs Act. It felt like there was more gig economy stuff like just pre-COVID. And then now we're getting back to that. Yeah, I think that for me, at least, the first thing to do is acknowledge the kind of privileged place that I'm in with. So my wife has a pretty steady job at a biotech company, and that provides healthcare for our family. And just in the United States, that's table stakes for being able to be here and surviving and living. But with that said, I think we both looked at our lives and we're both very busy and not spending as much time with our family as we wanted, not having the schedule flexibility we needed to have. And then I was having this sort of moment where I'm all in on this generative AI technology. And again, we were doing some of it at Slim AI. We were doing it, some of it really successfully and really enjoying that. But it wasn't going to be the core focus of the company. And we had other bigger fish to fry in the product development. And I said, okay, given these two things, can I do, you know, rather than 50, 60, 70, whatever hours per week, can I do 15 hours a week? And had that conversation with our CEO. And he said, yeah, hey, we can use you whatever time you can give us. And we still have these needs and can't guarantee those will be the needs forever, but let's give it a try. And so then with that, I had my first client and I was able to make that transition. And just happenstance, as I was publishing on LinkedIn some things about AI and what I was learning, had another person in my network come through, a person I worked with at TripAdvisor, who now has a new job. And she was looking into how they could use AI for some of their product and content development. I said, okay, well, maybe I am going to be making this move to consulting. Can I come consult with you all for a few hours a week? And she said, yeah, we did a POC that turned into sort of a more full-time engagement. So now I've got my kind of two clients and have a few others who are interested in bringing them on. And it's freeing. It's not the first time I've done this. So I was a freelance writer back in my journalism days, my writing days, as I was in between editing jobs. And so I did that on and off for a couple of years and knew a few people who were really successful with it. But it's a very difficult thing to manage. And in writing, the paychecks aren't quite as good as they are in AI product development. And for me, it wasn't like a good lifestyle fit because you just never really knew where your next check was coming from. This time around for me, I think I'm like much more structured in the way I'm approaching it and the way I'm getting clients and the way I'm putting myself out there to let people know that I'm doing this. And so far, so good. But I do know that it's like a time balance, right? When you're not delivering for your existing clients, you should be going out there finding new clients or generating content or writing stuff. Yeah. Or, you know, at the end of the day, there's just a lot of things to do. And if one of your motivations for this is to have some more schedule flexibility, I have a friend who runs his own PR company, and I told him I was doing this, and he said, Yeah. When you're in a client services business, it's great. You can work any 80-hour week you want. That kind of resonated with me, and it has been, which is, okay, so there's not less work. It's just more flexibility as to when you do that work. But so far, so good.
That is true. And yeah, I think becoming a dad, right? I mean, you have this 2-year-old now, and that's such a change of perspective and priorities, right? I wondered if you could speak to that a little bit for our listeners.
Yeah, I'll say one, Slim AI was amazing as a company. When we had Ollie, I think we were a seed stage company we had just raised our Series A, but it was very early stage, very chaotic, very busy. And I'll say just like my CEO, the leadership there, the way they handled paternity leave, the flexibility at the company was amazing. But my CEO did joke with me a couple of times. You've got three babies. You've got your startup. You've got your child. And then we had a puppy at the time, which was in hindsight, not a great decision, but.
Oh, that's a busy time. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little chaotic. A lot of bodily fluids everywhere all the time. but yeah, it did. For me, I love being a father and it's really changed just everything. Like you said, I know you have kids too. And for me, it's like, how can I make sure I'm providing, but then also have time to spend with him and time to be there when he gets sick or if he can't go into school. And our parents are a little bit older and you want to spend as much time with them as you can while you have that time. And that means taking a Friday afternoon and going down to grandma and grandpa's house. And if that means I have to work Sunday morning, so be it. Like that's the trade-off I'm making so that I can do that. But yeah, it's about time.
Now you have that flexibility. Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you do end up in this cycle of like, wake up at 4 or 5, try to get a couple hours of work in before he wakes up and then get him to daycare. Then I work, then I pick him up and then I work. And then he goes to bed at 8 and I sit back down at the computer and I'm working again. And so you're in this constant churn and cycle and it can wear on you a bit. Certainly.
Yeah. I don't think you're alone in that, right? Like everyone that becomes new parents, they struggle, especially professionals that are excelling in their career and doing very well. They have a certain thing and way of doing things, the certain schedule, certain way of working that works for them at that time. And then this thing, this beautiful thing just changes your life like crazy and it shifts that schedule. So I do think it really forces you to prioritize your time, which is, like you said, the most important thing here is time and how you use it. And then now with their time and your time and work, like, you also have to prioritize things you didn't necessarily have to prioritize, especially getting older, is like your health, your mental health, your well-being, your physical fitness, your diet stuff, like all this kind of stuff you have to reposition, rethink of. I always think that it's a nice forcing function for you to prioritize what's important in your life. And then depending on how your body and mental state is feeling, you need to take a step back and reassess. It's the new normal, right? You broke the rules with the kid and now you're setting that new normal, new set of rules, and you're going to break it again when they become three-nager and get all crazy and never ends. So creativity exists everywhere if you think about it.
Well, I'll say I'm like 1 month into this journey, so I certainly don't have it figured out. And it's a startup for me too, right? So it's constantly evolving and I'm learning, but like a couple of things I do are like, one is to just, I call our sort of family unit Van Scott Industries. That's just like a kind of portmanteau of our last names. And so I actually like time track Van Scott Industries or VSI so that I know, okay, hey, I have to go pick up the kid because he's sick. He can't go to daycare or we're going to the aquarium with the grandparents. Okay. That's VSI time. So make sure I have a healthy dose of that going and I don't get overwhelmed. But I do think it is hard. You and I were talking about this a little bit offline, which is like the switch to being hourly and tracking that way, I think is difficult because there's only so many hours. I mean, you can work 100 hours a week for sure, but how much of that time is productivity time for your clients? How much time is downtime? Are you, like I do group therapy every Tuesday night. I've been doing that for years for sort of mental health and I have to prioritize that. Otherwise, it's just easy enough to work during that time when I'm not doing work billable hour time feels like I'm letting someone down somewhere. And so that's been a big adjustment.
And you just keep tweaking until you find that rhythm that really works for you. And you get your own schedule going and it's an always like you set intentions and a reflection moment, right? It's like, I have this intention to have this balance of work life and that might change the next week or what have you. But at least if you're doing that diligently, you have some process of setting intention and reflection. It'll help you. It'll help you in so many ways.
Yeah. And I think for me, one of the big benefits for me, at least, is I've been able to focus my time more on things that I'm really passionate about and really care about. Like I said, with the AI product work, that's been really fulfilling and that's been really great with Slim AI as a client and helping them through this transition that we'll be going through in the next few weeks. And a lot of that is content and strategy and that type of stuff. And that's been really gratifying to help support them. A few of the clients that I've been asking me to help them evaluate AI tools. So now I get to dive into legal or CRM or technical documentation, what's evolving in those spaces for AI. So all of that's been very gratifying for me. It does come at the balance point of that. You can work any 80 hours that you want and then still feeling like you want to spend time with family and be supportive to the people in your life. So
yeah, it gets frustrating sometimes. I feel that push and pull. But there's moments in your life where it's more important for you to figure this thing out, to learn something, to get your hold of it. And because it helps overall, it'll help the other things. It's like this bet for the future of, if I can get this thing understood, then it'll help me launch off and have better hours. It'll help me do X, Y, Z. And then there's times where it's like, Kevin, you can't learn how to code and React right now. It's not time. You got to go pick up your daughter, right? It's like, you got to stop. So I feel that because it is frustrating when you're in that zone, in that mode of getting, you know, this new exciting technology figured out. And it's just, you know, it's just that balance and that temp. Yeah, it's difficult to manage and balance. Yeah. But
I'll say one thing that's been absolutely critical for me, and I'd be very remiss in not mentioning this, is having a mentor. I can't use the word coach with this person in particular, but I have somebody in my network who I got back in touch with. She was a lecturer at MIT. We met through that, and she's since gone into sort of her own private consulting and is retired and she's just been gracious enough to meet with me on a regular basis as we talk about these intentional transitions in my career and helping me find. Once I landed on AI and said, okay, you know what? I've been doing this for a long time. I've just been doing it in all these different aspects, and I've never branded that for myself. I've never like internally adjusted to this is like what I want to do. Once I made that change, like a lot of the other decisions became a lot easier to handle. Yeah, you mentioned learning to code and React. At the time, I was like learning how to code in Rust. It was like, oh no, this is all about time. And does Rust really help me with AI? It's a cool, fun thing to do. And it was semi-applicable to my work at Slim, but I don't need to learn how to code in Rust. I don't need to know how to do that. That's cool and interesting, but it's not useful. And I'm working with somebody who can call BS on you, but also be super supportive and help you. She is constantly on me for time management, priorities, focus. Don't mess up all the gains that you've had. And don't forget what the big rocks are for you, which in your case is spending time with family and then working on these AI type of projects. So yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, big shout out.
Yeah, I love that support network. It's super critical. And yeah, love that calling out the importance of it and how it shapes that work. I wanted to touch a little bit on the community aspect and then we'll wrap things up with a bit of homework. But you mentioned launching off your own community. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Like I said, I've always been like a technology affiliated product person, and not to say a technical product manager, that's a different thing, but they would certainly be welcome. But I've found a number of people in my travels. I think you're in this bucket as well, just product people who really love technology and love the coding, the data analysis side of it. Yeah, that was why I launched. As I started doing some personal writing around what I was learning in AI and what I was learning in as I was getting into being a VP and these other things at a cloud native technology security company, I started writing under the product.codes website, and that became a little bit of who I wanted to be, and then found a few people. It's a very small group right now, but we'll be opening it up a bit more on a Discord channel where we can come and talk about different technology that we're learning about, AI. There's a few open source projects that some of the people in the community are working on. And so we share or give each other little code reviews or encouragement, share things that we're learning. And so, yeah, I think it's just a cool place to have people come and gather. And yeah, something I learned during my time at Slim AI, where we had a head of community, Martin Wimpress, who came over from Ubuntu. And he was doing developer stuff and Twitch streams and all of these kinds of things. So I joined up with him and was learning how to do all this community stuff and found this whole world of Discords and Twitch and streaming and all this kind of stuff, and just really loved doing it. And he ended up leaving the company about a year ago. And from then on, I didn't really have a Twitch streamer or somebody who I was working with in Discord on a regular basis, and have always just missed it. And now that I'm doing the solopreneurship thing, I'm going to try to get back into it. Hopefully I'll start streaming a bit myself too. But yeah, if people are interested or if you're a product manager who loves technology, pop over to product.codes and you'll find a link to the Discord there and come join us, hang out. We'll do some hands-on coding that engineers will be embarrassed about. And that's the vibe.
Love it. All right. We'll link that out in the show description, but that's awesome.
Yeah. Any tips for me as a fellow solopreneur who's also got a good community going, got a good thing going with the podcast, all that kind of stuff. What do I need
tips,
to know?
I don't know. The community is more about, the mission around it, to begin with. It's sometimes that blends in with the person itself, right? It's like, maybe they exemplify the mission, but I like it as, that's the purpose for this thing. And people come join community because they find identity in who they are, and that resonates with them, and they want to be around, like you said earlier, like-minded individuals trying to do the same thing at different levels. And so they want to learn in those communities, they want to be a part of it, they want to contribute. So finding those ways to like center around that mission, right? What is this here for? It's to, so PMs can learn about AI and code and do fun, creative making things. Like, yes, let's go, right?
Yeah,
I think Product Coffee was founded, by accident, honestly. It was really about just, hey, I'm new to product management and at a product company that is badass, and I want to learn from you all. So let's go get coffee and let me ask you a bunch of dumb questions, and then that's it.
Yes.
And so then it turns into a podcast, and it's still that. I get to ask really smart people like yourself about really dumb questions and learn a bunch, and that's why I keep doing it. And then people listen to it, which is nice. So I think, that with the intention of, I want to level up personally and I want to share what I'm learning with others, and who better from the conversation than we have, right? Like, I think that's the easiest way to do that.
Yeah.
And so I do think there's always things that we can do better, right? Like things like that interactivity, the community aspect of it. We always experiment with things, and I don't know if we've nailed everything, right? But it's been fun. So yeah, that's my quick tips for that. But
cool.
Yeah. That's helpful.
Product manage it, basically. Like experiment, learn, grow. Yeah.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's all we know.
I think it's good. I think there's a big need for this type of content and this type of community. I think like a lot of people get into product management from so many different walks of life and areas. And I always get questions like, am I technical enough to be a product manager? That's not the right question. The right question is, do you like solving problems? Do you talking to users? Do you like building things? Do you like seeing how users and humans interact with them? If you answer yes to those questions, you can be a product manager. It doesn't matter what your background is. So
absolutely. Yeah. We have other folks on the show too. We have everyone from entrepreneurs to user researchers, to designers, to engineers. So we want to keep opening that up to others that are just passionate about building and making product and good experiences. If y'all are curious and listening to this and have somebody you'd like to recommend, please reach out. It's pretty easy to reach us. Let's wrap up with some homework, and then Peter, we can then plug some things afterwards.
Sounds
we
good.
Usually take one thing from this episode that the listeners can put into practice for the week. Anything come to mind from you?
Ooh, okay. All right. I would say build an AI application that goes beyond ChatGPT. The only rule is it can't be ChatGPT. And there's a million different ways to do this, and it doesn't need to be anything good or interesting. If people want a cheat code, I would say look at this thing called Streamlit, which is a really cool way of building sort of lightweight applications. There's a bunch of no-code tools out there, but do something with AI that is useful to you that is outside of ChatGPT, just so you can open your aperture a little bit. And I think that would be my homework that I would give people, just so they can start seeing what the world outside of ChatGPT looks like. ChatGPT is great, but a lot of people I talk to, that's their only interaction with AI to date. Do something else that's not ChatGPT, so you can start getting some better grounding in what else is out there.
Love that. That's a great recommendation. Yeah, let's see. I think for me, I'm going to go, since you went the technology product route, I'm going to go the family personal time route of this. Make sure you set expectations for yourself. If you don't have a good practice of setting intentions for the week, time intentions, where you're spending your energy, I think, and then a reflection is the really important part there. Do that. Make sure that you're doing that, if not on a daily basis, on a weekly or whatever cadence works for you. I think that'll be the homework for this week. Set your intentions now for the week and then reflect on it.
I'll say,
and
I can give a little, I can give you my, here's how I'm not great at this, so I'll be the first to admit that. But there's this podcast called The Accidental Creative way back in the day. And they had a thing where every Friday afternoon they had the very good framework for it, but it's like, You look at your meetings for the next week and which ones are circle meetings that you need time to prepare for. And it's just basically this practice of every Friday afternoon, blocking time on your calendar for the following week so that you have the right time blocks. I do this every Friday afternoon. I've done it for a decade or more, and my weeks would just be lost. I would get nothing accomplished without this kind of practice. So if that helps people, great. If not, do the homework from Kevin some other way. But
I love that. No, that's a great recommendation. Peter, you already plugged product.codes. And well, again, we'll link that out in the bio. Is there anything else that you want the listeners to know about? Where to find you? Where to reach out?
Yeah, mostly LinkedIn for me, linkedin.com/in/PSVan. And so like mostly where I am, PSVAN or Peter Van Orden. I'm pretty easy to find. There aren't a lot of us out there. But yeah, follow me on LinkedIn, connect up. I'm always happy to meet people and connect with like-minded folks. So yeah, that'd be the best place for me.
Great, Peter. Thanks again for joining us. It looks like we finished up our coffee, so go level up.
This has been Product Coffee. Produced and engineered by me, Kevin Gentry. You can now record a voice message and send us ideas or topics to cover, and who knows, we might end up playing it on the show. You can also become a supporter of Product Coffee by contributing a monthly donation to help us sustain future episodes. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Product Coffee on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.